KABU is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society's concert season. On Friday, November 30th, the PFS concert features Patrick Ball and the Legends of the Celtic Harp in their program titled A Winter Gift. These three famed harpers perform Celtic legends and weave English and Irish literature with rare pieces of holiday music. The concert and storytelling event is at the Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steele in Portland, at 7:30 p.m. On January 18th next year, the Northwest band True North will bring their folk and bluegrass stylings to the PFS stage. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and look on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My name's Joseph Galliman. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Robert Hoffman. He's the Executive VP of the American Institute of Architects of Portland. And he's here to talk about 50 years after Whitney Young Jr., a show on now at the AIA Portland, and also to talk about the recent Architecture Awards. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, Robert.
Oh, Joseph, thanks for having me. I love talking with you.
Tell us about Whitney M. Young. At the recent Architecture Awards, there was a everyone was reminded that something big happened here in Portland 50 years ago. What was it?
That's right. Hopefully, a lot of folks are familiar with who Whitney M. Young was. He was a civil rights leader who was very involved during the time of Martin Luther King's work. And at some point, he had become president of the Urban League, the National Urban League. So he was very well attuned to not just those issues of equality and integration that were really brought to mind in that time period, but he understood the urban condition, and that translated to his awareness of what is going on in architecture and architects. So he was a guest of the AIA here in Portland in 1968, where the AIA National Convention was held. Interestingly enough, we can't hold the AIA National Convention here. We don't have the facilities for it yet.
What do you mean?
Well, it's too big. I mean, it's usually 20,000 to 25,000 attendees. So that convention's usually in larger cities, New York, Chicago, places like that. But in 68, the AIA was small enough, or that event was small enough, we could host it in Portland. So Whitney M. Young's here in Portland and addressing the attendees of that convention and talking about the role of architecture, the role of architects in cities and communities, the urban environment.
And what do you say?
Well, here's a gentleman that I think very well aware of the importance of design. Not an architect himself, but he understood that process in terms of building cities, building communities, and probably I would infer from his speech incredibly respectful of the profession, but also felt obligated, and I think the AIA, and we'll get to this, clearly acknowledges, to remind the profession, you're not really understanding what's going on in our urban communities. You're not a diverse profession at all, and you're sort of blind to that part of what you might be bringing to solutions. I mean, there's a couple very poignant quotes that he made. Something, I don't want to paraphrase it, but you can see this if you visit the exhibit, of course. Something to the effect of, you are most distinguished by your thunderous silence on these issues. And this was a pretty hard slap in the face for the AIA, meaning they knew it was true. They were impressed that somebody could tie this all together back to what architects do professionally for society. And it was basically laying down a challenge. And, as a creative profession and a profession that's very, focused on humanity and helping people thrive and be successful and live comfortable, safe lives, this was a real challenge that altered officially the AIA's perception of where they were going and what they needed to do from that point forward to make what was a very non-integrated profession more more integrated and more able to respond to different voices.
Mm-hmm. So what was he saying? I mean, 50 years ago, were they just building tower blocks and replacing old neighborhoods, bulldozing old neighborhoods, or was it something else?
Well, you know, if you're familiar at all with that time period, you're during the civil rights movement, you're right in the heart of that. This event happened months after, just after Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and not that far after John F. Kennedy's assassination. So there was a lot of things happening that were awful. And from the built environment side of things, you were kind of within a sweet spot of modern urban revitalization and urbanization, where older neighborhoods that were probably from the early 1900s had now, and a lot of things built out of wood or lesser permanent materials were dilapidating. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, got translated into, we need to redesign these parts of the cities. But in doing so, when you are not conscious of the culture that has built that community, or you're not aware of its influence on architecture and the way people live, the way they interact in spaces and buildings, then it can become somewhat, diagrammatic. So, there were projects done in the 50s, and the big one that we were talking about earlier, the Pruitt-Igoe housing project in St. Louis. I mean, this was a massive concrete towers, and basically tried to create a different form of living and habitating in a community that was not familiar with that, and took mass quantities of people and put them in pretty quote-unquote modern but confined spaces. And it was a dismal social failure. It's one of the most studied projects. When you go into architecture in academia, you learn about this very soon.
What's it called again?
Yeah, Pruitt-Igoe. And there is actually a recent movie that I haven't seen. I think it came out in a couple of years ago or recently, chronicling sort of the truth and the mythology around that incident. And I'm mentioning that project because this is a time period where everyone was now very cognizant that architecture has this effect and has a responsibility, right, to address life as it really is, not in some idealized fashion, right, that, people are different depending on where you come from and your social context, your cultural beliefs, your religious beliefs, the way you perceive. And so Whitney Young, being leading the Urban League in the nation, he's coming in front of the most prominent body. And it still is, I will say. I'll plug the AIA and say we have this institute that has very high standards for practice and awareness of the importance of architecture. And he said, you guys are, you're not understanding what you're missing and you need to do better. And he's looking out at an audience, which he's quoted as basically saying, I'm looking out at an audience, predominantly white male architects. And yet you have this authority and talent and toolkit to design cities and communities. And we need to know, you need to know what your deficiencies are, and we mm-hmm. need to work together on that.
Was the issue purely architectural, like towers don't work with narrow corridors and elevators that break? Was it planning, like, people got moved out of the Elliott neighborhood to make way for freeways and...
It's all of the above.
Quarter.
It's exactly what you're alluding to. It's more than just a building type. It's a mentality about communities and diversity and how that affects built form. And I would also say connectivity. I mean, we're kind of blessed in Portland, despite our ongoing issues, and there are many, many of them. We're all painfully aware, but there are some things that we do better and others have thought of sooner than in other cities, having to do with, walkability and our smaller blocks. And yet we've made some mistakes over the years too. And, there's one project right now that I find really interesting that Rakaya Adams is leading this group called Albina Vision. And I think Hannah Barrietti is one of the architects on the team. And there's a bunch of groups involved in reimagining what the area around I-5 and the Rose Quarter could be again, because before it was turned into all that, it was once a very prominent, predominantly African-American community. There were some European cultures in there too. It was thriving, and all of that went away when I-5 came through and the Rose Quarter and the Coliseum was built. So that's an interesting, you know, I'm kind of doing a comparison contrast between that and something like the Pruitt-Igoe project, where you're saying, okay, we made those mistakes in the past and we have made a lot of progress, but there are also things now that knowing what we know now, we can go back and readdress and say, wow, you know, it would be nice to have another well thought out, connected, integrated neighborhood where there used to be one. And a lot of the African American community here in the Portland metro area was displaced mm-hmm. when that happened. And they're painfully aware of that. And there's strong memories of family there. I mean, what we're trying to do is understand that while we're aware of this, you have to actually make some goals, right? Sort of the SMART goal mentality. You know, what are you going to do about that? And yes, Nkenge encouraged us to reach out to our universities and say, not only do we want to encourage you to draw African Americans, people of color, people of different races into the profession of architecture, but you have to actively go find them and identify them. And then you have to go further back, most likely in the educational pipeline, right to elementary school. And you have to go into cultures at that point in childhood and make people who aren't necessarily aware of the profession of architecture, mm-hmm. definitely not aware that they have an active opportunity to take part in that. It's almost like, would you consider it a human right that people are able to participate in the design of their own environment? Mm-hmm. I would say, to some degree, yes.
Mm-hmm. So there are things like architects in the schools, right? They go to elementary schools and they get the kids to build things out of cardboard and think about design. And then there are internships. Every company here has the capacity to take on a few interns, and it's up to them who they choose.
That's right.
So is that the kind of thing that is going to change this?
Well, it's the kind of thing that makes measurable positive steps in the right direction. And Han Mei even brought this up when we were talking about what the AIA in Oregon can do about this. And it's funny you should mention it, because internships is a goal. You know, if we went to our firms that are actively looking for people, particularly over the summer or part-time work or whatever, those entry-level positions, I mean, they actually don't refer to themselves, so you know, as interns anymore. They're emerging professionals. That's what the profession refers to young people coming in. But firms, the suggestion might be that we go to our member firms where sort of the culture thrives in terms of practice and say, you know, what can you do to actually go out and seek these people, not just openly welcome them when they happen to show up on your door, but go find them and remind them, we are interested in your views. We'd love to meet you. Will you come to Portland? And try to increase the numbers of people of color coming into the profession of architecture. And Nkenge made a really interesting comment. She goes, well, that's great, but think about the impact. You've got to build enough momentum behind that, because, you know, it feels really odd when you're the only person of a certain background in a larger setting. You know, imagine you're the one African-American young woman walking around a largely predominantly, you know, white firm. How comfortable are you going to be? And that's a fair comment. And it's like, well, I tend to want to revert to my own feelings about the value of this diverse view on design. And it's like we're doing ourselves a disservice. And architects know this. Believe me, they know this. Mm-hmm. You're doing yourself and your firm a disservice by not taking advantage of the kind of perspective that comes from a more diverse population of professionals. We need to do that.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Robert Hoffman. He's the Executive VP of the American Institute of Architects, Portland. He's here talking about an exhibit now at the AIA called 50 Years After Whitney Young Jr. And he's also going to talk about the recent Architecture Awards. So every year the AIA has a big bash at Revolution Hall with the band, and 300 or so people show up, mostly architects, yeah, people in the trade, and it's the big, you know, it's the Oscars of the Portland architects. And it's fun. They show slides. You have a jury who come from a different city. They look at all the projects blind, and they pick their favorites and give awards. Tell us what was the mood this year, and who were the jury?
The amount of work that's happening right now, because we're still in a fairly active economy in terms of the built environment. So architects and engineers and construction folks and all those clients, and of course financial institutions, everybody's involved in making a lot of buildings. Mm-hmm. So there's an energy that needs to be recognized. It's very positive. Most firms we know, and from the chapter's standpoint, are pretty busy. There's a few that are in a little bit of a cycle of slowness, and that's usually just the waiting time between large projects sometimes that happens. But it's positive. So we look forward to that event that we just held on the 2nd at November 2nd at Revolution Hall, because we knew people were going to generally be in a pretty good mood. There were also a lot of firms that I know, there were some firms that had like deadlines that day and were trying to get there in time, and there were exhausted people that might have been up late a few nights in a row. Uh-huh. So who knows? But it was good.
Yeah. So it's a boom time. So one of the biggest firms in Portland that people will have heard of is Allied Works. Their first kind of project was the Winding Kennedy conversion, that old warehouse into an ad agency. They've done what's that big museum in New York City they did? A craft museum.
Yeah, they did. I remember their Columbus Circle project.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. If you go to New York, it's a big, strange-looking, stripy building. So they won an award, an honor award, which is the gold medal, for the National Music Center in Calgary, in Canada. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the Experience Music Project in Seattle, but a bit more classy. I mean, it's like it's a museum, it's a recording studio, it's a concert hall, it's like a bunch of different things in this incredible sort of castle-like building, which is all shiny and kind of rose gold. It's ceramic on the outside. And it hovers over a historical building, which is like a little hotel now. Right. So anyway, it's a exciting building, and it's up in Calgary.
Well, that...
What did the judges say?
Well, you know, the jury from Philadelphia, we had three great jurors from Philadelphia, all prominent architects, and... As you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned this. You know, they receive packets of information from the participants in the awards program, and they're not labeled, so they don't know from the information what firm this is. Mm-hmm. And they are sort of bound not to go looking for that. And
no Google.
They don't go to Google Earth and look at the projects. They look at the documents submitted. You know, narrative and about 20 images is really all you get. So. This project, Allied Works' project, was one of several that won an honor award. So in AIA design competition, you have something called a citation, then you move up to something called a merit award, and then the honor award is the highest level that a jury would normally recognize. And this project won one of the honor awards this year, and deservingly so. I mean, the jury loved it. It's one of those, and I don't mind that you compared it to the Experience Music project in Seattle, but I would say, at least from my point of view, there's a maturity here that it's not as much about sort of the effect of warped surfaces and what you can do with these materials. I mean that I've been to that museum, and it's great. This is a little more sophisticated.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And the jury loved that, and the use of light and the way spaces work. I mean, it's a fascinating project.
Mm-hmm. And I compared it to the EMP, so that people would want to go there. Mm. It's a music museum, and you go there and kind of have fun.
Yeah,
it's not like a boring.
No, but I think it will. Some of the jury's commentary that, you know, wasn't always, everything's not relayed at the award ceremony because we don't have time. But when they were talking about this project, at least the part I heard, and I'm sure Jennifer Mannard, who went to Philadelphia and worked with the jury on our behalf, I mean, it's going to stand the test of time. It's one of those buildings that is very modern, but elegant and, you know, strong in its everything that it's trying to do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's grand. It's a big public, you know, big budget thing. But then there were a couple of vineyards or wine tasting rooms, in the Willamette Valley that won awards. Tell us about the Furioso.
Well, that was Wechter Architecture, Ben Wechter's project. And interestingly enough, that was a remodel. And that also won an honor award. In fact, it was definitely at the top of the list. It's hard to say exactly how each juror would rank these honor award projects, but it was a very highly regarded. It's one of those projects where you look at the opportunity a winery or a vineyard might bring, both to a client and a design team, and you say, well, here's something now that went from a very utilitarian type mm-hmm. of operation where it's clearly, you know, bare bones. We've got a building. We've got a roof. We're going to make some wine. Now you have an expression that is very modern mm-hmm. and yet very regional in its use of materiality, its connection to the site, the openness, the use of glass. It's just beautiful, and the jury loved it.
It looks like it's kind of like Memorial Coliseum, where it's glass all the way around. You can see in. It's a big kind of rectangle. And then the roof kind of floats above it. And the roof is asymmetrical, you know, where the pointy bit at the top
sure
doesn't really touch, you know. It's like, anyway, it's just very odd looking, but beautiful. And the idea is you go in there and you sit and you drink your wine, you look out over the vineyard. It's no longer just like a farm building. It's
right.
It's an event almost.
It is, and I think that, you know, just that project type. I mean, you and I talked a little bit about this the other day. You know, the idea of a winery. I mean, I didn't know until a couple years ago there's like 400 wineries in the Willamette Valley. I mean, I would have guessed a couple of hundred. There's 400, and mm-hmm. many of them start very small with very modest accommodations, and it's and then, you know, as things happen, you know, they tend to grow. And there's been a tradition in the last few years of some very, very well done architecture being brought to those vineyard and wine tasting experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fantastic.
Well, Allied Works did one, right?
Yeah.
So called Blossa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the magazine one that you always see.
Yeah, that had a lot of national press, and it deserved it. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Oregon has a. If you travel around, even to the East Coast, you know that the East Coast folks are drinking our Pinot like crazy. I mean, it's a very nice product, and it's well appreciated. And so it's nice that the placemaking of where that comes from here in the Willamette Valley can be expressed through the architecture. Mm-hmm. And it's nice that clients want this, that they understand that brings value to what it is they're trying to do.
The Furioso, if you go there, it's near Dundee. The building is sort of off in the vineyard, but also in Dundee on the highway, like right on the edge of the road by its own parking lot, is another one called Day Wines.
Yes.
And who built that?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that.
Fieldwork.
I'm sorry, Fieldwork.
Fieldwork
they're
Design.
Gonna, I hope
marketing.
They don't listen to this because those are friends of mine. It's just one of those mental things.
Yeah, yeah.
Fieldwork's design and architecture, great firm, very collaborative sort of personnel. So they have interior designers, architects there, probably some people that are very well-versed in making, whether it's metal and woodwork. This is a much smaller project. It's a tiny project, and it was also a remodel. And that's what's odd. So this one won an honor award, too, for a small project.
Mm-hmm.
It's small. But it is, it's fantastic what they were able to do with a pretty modest budget relative to a project that size, creating a sense of entry, a series of spaces that sort of are related to one another. I mean, the tasting room is sort of as the destination for the public visitor. It's not that large, but the way you approach it and the way that series of spaces uses materials, it's all very simple and elegant, and I think that firm has a very nice touch with how they use things like wood and metal. It's not like it conks you over the head. It's a subtle appreciation of the properties of those materials and the way they touch the earth and the way light hits them. It's just great.
We just have 1 minute left. Fieldwork also did a series of 3 pedestrian bridges in Forest Park.
Oh, right.
And they're wooden. And just tell us just quickly what they did that was different.
Well, again, here's a submission in architecture awards, and it's not a building. I mean, I guess technically it's a building. It's built, right? But it's not a habitable structure the way people typically think of, you know, I'm going to go into this building, I'm going to open a door. It's a bridge design, and it's very elegant, of course. It's very modern. It's made out of wood. But I think what really captured the jury was the way the firm was able to describe the concept of the parts and the pieces that were sort of almost like a prefabrication mentality. You don't see that when it's in place. What you see is this very elegant expression, but they actually mapped out a concept for how you would break this down into components and how those components might actually form, I think the word they used was permutations, you know, the different permutations mm-hmm. of this design. And it was just, it's so simple, but yet so brilliant in a way. And yet it results in something that looks natural in that setting in the park. It's a great
design.
And there's
3 of them.
Yeah.
Right.
It is.
And then finally, if you're up on Quimby, Northwest Quimby, at about, I think, 22nd.
Okay.
So 22nd or 23rd.
Oh, right.
There is a very flashy building by Skylab,
right.
which was 2 warehouses kind of cut into each other with a strange tower added. If you can look in and see people, as is the Skylab way, there's a music studio in there. Somewhere in the back, there's an actual skate park made of concrete.
It looks
like a swimming pool.
Right.
And it's just this crazy kind of building, big budget. I don't really know who lives there or what the idea is. But, you know, Skylab did the yard on the east end of the Burnside Bridge.
Right.
And they did a bunch of stuff for Nike recently.
Yes.
So what do you think of this building?
Well, number one, I'm trying to restrain my own personal judgment here because I'm not a juror.
Yeah.
But I will say, as an architect, it's a really interesting project. Skylab, they're very good at form. They have an appreciation of how the material and form, you know, things that, you know, you're looking at this image now, things that are not necessarily orthogonal can also do amazing, can have amazing effects on space. And I think they're very good at recognizing opportunity for the different parts of buildings to relate to one another and have a role. And when you said open up, I mean, here's these 2 warehouses, and they created this thing that sort of unites them in the middle that's a very open sort of glassy modern tower with that sort of form. And the jury was fascinated because when you try to draw this and you look at this as an architect does in a series of drawings, you immediately are going to spend time trying to decipher this. You know, what does this really look like? How does it actually work? You know, what are the... And so the jury admitted they spent a lot of time studying this and became more and more fascinated with it. And I know they did go to see it once they got to Portland. They just couldn't help themselves.
Yeah.
They had to see this building.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't have time to see all of them.
Yeah.
But this one, they loved it because of all of those things that you kind of rattled off. It's just, mm-hmm. it shows a maturity and a playfulness, but it is not, it is still sophisticated, you know, and it will, mm-hmm. it'll stand for a long time.
So you can find a list of all the winners at the AIA Portland website and also in my article in the Portland Tribune. That's it for this week. My guest this week was Robert Hoffman. He's the Executive VP of the American Institute of Architects, Portland. And he was here talking about 50 years after the Whitney Young Jr. exhibit, which is on now through May at the AIA Portland. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, Robert.
Oh, thanks, Joseph. I really appreciate it. That was great. Thank you.
Great.
Want to take a break from commercialization? Giving Tuesday is here.
For the past 8 years, you've been using Giving Tuesday to push back against the rising pressures of consumerism and invest in your community.
KBOO has been in this struggle with you for the past 50 years.
Make sure your contributions count and support your community radio station today.
Plus, when you give to KBOO on Giving Tuesday through the Willamette Week Give Guide, you will be entered into a raffle for two nights in Brasadas Ranch's Luxury Suites and a round of golf.
And if you are under 36, you will be entered twice. Go to kboo.fm/give and make your donation right now.
You'll be glad you did.
Support KBOO,
where music makes the movement.
What's good, Portland? This is Tevin.
And this is Jalen.
Next week on Combined Culture Radio, tune in for an exclusive listening experience.
We are Portland's native, Kobe, premiering his new album, Escalate, with me.
That's an exclusive opportunity to lean in on Kobe on CC Radio at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, November 28th, only on KBOO.
I'm on the right away. Don't have to find a way. Get out my way. I'm making better plays. You know I make better plays. This morning feeling like I needed to.
Good afternoon. You are listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO is a dynamic community of 500 volunteers who keep the station running. Depending on your interests and availability, there are a great variety of things to do. Additionally, KBOO offers training in radio production, voice and microphone skills, audio editing, and field recording for volunteers who have attended volunteer orientation and commit to volunteering to fill station needs. Do you want to get involved? Come to the next volunteer.